Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
It's time to celebrate. The celebration begins days before 4th as the bangs and pops of fireworks get started early. But it's important to remember that dogs' hearing is many times more sensitive than ours, and that loud explosions can truly terrify our best friends, the dogs, cats, birds, and other creatures that show so much love for us. When we return, you'll hear what you should know about animals on the 4th of July and how this day of celebration can be a very terrifying experience for our animal friends. If you or people you know expect to partake in pyrotechnic partying, listen up to your voice of the earth here on the Wildside News. This next segment is really important for lots of people, particularly young people who like to grab sparklers, firecrackers, and bottle rockets and join in the neighborhood fun. It is fun. But it's very important to know that our best friends, our pets, our cats and dogs, and rabbits and birds can suffer terribly. Now, no one wants to do that to our animals, so please take a few minutes to listen up on how you can keep from making this 4th of July a day of disaster for our pets and neighborhood creatures. This is a great time of the year in America when we have the opportunity to go out and really celebrate the great freedoms that we have. And, of course, that means the 4th of July. This weekend is going to be filled with people heading out all over out to parks and to national parks and celebrating in their backyards with friends and at the beach and other places. And, of course, a huge part of that celebration in America traditionally has been with all sorts of fireworks, firecrackers and sparklers and all sorts of things. And it certainly is a great moment to witness, and it's fun, but you know there's another side to this that can be somewhat challenging. And joining us to really give us a real heads up on how we can really take care of our animal friends this weekend, and really any time, but particularly over the 4th of July weekend, is Dr. Mark Goldstein, who is the president of the San Diego Humane Society. He's a veterinarian, a practicing veterinarian, but now serving as president. Dr. Goldstein, welcome to the Wildside News.
Hi, Sydney. It's great to be here, and it's great to talk about anything having to do with animals and kids.
Let's just talk a little bit on a personal side here. What is it about animals that has caused you to give your life over to caring for them?
Whoa, I think it's that unconditional love that they give us. For me, I've been in this career, profession, avocation, and love for 25 years now plus, and it's wonderful to work both with animals and people. We call that the human-animal bond, and to see the benefits that not only people bring to animals, but the wonderful joys and love that animals bring into our life.
I think sometimes it's a story that needs to be told and retold all the time. For people who are familiar with animals and have pets, they understand it. Some people don't, and that can lead to some problems because people who aren't familiar with animals may not understand some of the challenges that are faced at a time like this for animals. So let's start out, first of all, by talking about what happens around the 4th of July and why this creates unique challenges for our animal friends.
Well, I think sometimes, and it's an interesting thing you say, Sydney, there's a big word that we called anthropomorphic, but what it really means is we try to give sort of human qualities to our animal friends. And one example of that is we may think that because we enjoy fireworks that they'll enjoy fireworks. And nothing could be further from the truth. When we watch what happens to our dogs and cats and guinea pigs and hamsters and rabbits and even our large animals, a firecracker going off, fireworks, whether it's in the air or on the ground, is an unexpected, not only surprising incident, but very frightening incident to animals. I think the closest I could have, talked to it and something we experience is, we're in bed just about to fall asleep and that big thunderclap goes off outside the window. And I think we can all, identify with how frightening that is. Well, to an animal, just because we know when you light the fuse, there's a big bang afterwards and maybe some colors, to an animal, that's a very, very frightening experience.
Well, animals also have special, unique characters and qualities and abilities that actually adds to this dilemma.
Absolutely. Not necessarily their eyesight in this case, but, their hearing, their ability to hear things is is, you know, 10 to 100 times fold, depending on the animal we're talking to, more than ours. So a loud bang to us is a massive explosion to them. And again, when you sort of put that together with not even knowing why it's happening in the first place, it's incredibly frightening.
Right. I don't know that animals really understand the concept of the 4th of July and why we're so happy doing these things.
It's great that you mentioned, Sydney. If you even think about our reactions around fireworks, you know, people get giddy, people get, you know, they start screaming, they're excited. There again, our animal friends who want to be so protective of us do not understand sometimes those displays of sort of fake fear, and they respond with real fear. Well, vibrations that are caused by fireworks, by bands, by drums, you know, all of these things. I don't mean to be a Scrooge here. I think they're wonderful. A lot of people get a lot of enjoyment out of it. It symbolizes the, you know, July 4th and the independence and freedom that we enjoy in this country. But I think we have to be sensitive and caring to our animal friends to protect them against not understanding these things.
Do you notice increased incidences of frightened and scared or perhaps even runaway animals over the 4th of July weekend?
You know, you've touched on it, the fright, fear and the scared and the scary behaviors are concerning to us, but the more dramatic issues are the ones you just mentioned. An animal running away and then subsequently getting lost on an evening, especially when it's very hard to get support services to help find your animals because it is a national holiday, coupled with the fact that some animals, when they're scared, may even injure themselves running around the house, trying to hide under something, trying to get behind the television and coming in contact with the wires. So what this brings up is maybe a bit of a discussion. What precautions can we take?
Let's do that. Let's talk about that. Yeah.
First, with a new animal in your house, and I hope I don't put a damper on anybody's plans for July 4th, you know, if you've never gone through at least one July 4th with your animal, you may want to stay with them, you know, to just leave them in your house and then go off to a party, which is what I prefer you do. Don't take them to the party. Please don't take your animals to fireworks displays or big parties on July 4th. Again, it's very frightening to them. If possible, you know, seeing how he reacts the first July 4th, I happen to have been blessed. I have had many dogs in my life, and I've never actually seen any of my dogs react too substantially. But I've been at friends' houses, and I've watched some animals using today's vernacular, you know, freak out. I mean, become so scared they don't know which way to turn. So I think it's important that we learn our own animals, just like in other circumstances. So the first time July 4th comes around with a new pet, if it's possible, be with them. Be there to comfort them. Be there to know how they react. If you are blessed with an animal that doesn't get really frightened, then obviously in future years, you know, you can go out. Just again, make sure they're well contained in a safe area and they're not going to get hurt. I wouldn't leave them in a backyard because you never know what your neighbors might be doing that night that they didn't do the night before. All of those issues are things to be considered. Other precautions to take, again, if you're doing the fireworks at your house, and your pet's inside or out in the backyard, which I hope he wouldn't be, we have to realize that, you know, we can tell a child, we can tell each other and our friends, hey, that fuse is lit, stay away from it. But the dog doesn't understand that, and their nature may be to run to it, not knowing that what's going to happen next. So, again, rule of thumb, they shouldn't be anywhere near. Fireworks and pets don't mix. We're not helping them. We're not helping ourselves. They should be in the house, well protected and cared for and comforted.
Obviously, none of us want to be Scrooges, but let's talk about, let's say, a dog or a cat in the house. You know, your friends are over, and this is going to be happening with great people. You know, the 4th of July is a time of celebration, and they will be in the backyard doing these things. What's the best way to help your dog live through that? What's the best way to constrain them, or how should they be placed, or what can we do in those situations?
Well, first and foremost, how we act will play a direct part in how the animal's going to react. If we're jumping around screaming and yelling and getting upset or getting frightened or having a great time but acting in a fashion which they don't understand, that will parlay into their behavior. That will affect their behavior. So staying calm, comforting is important. Making sure they're in a safe environment so that when they, if they do get scared, they're not going to suddenly run off a cliff or run into an area which could be harmful, run into the street, run behind the television or the laundry machine where they could get hurt. So make sure they're in a safe, protective environment and that our behavior is such that they can be comforted. Another offshoot to this, Sydney, that I think is worth mentioning, every once in a while we run into that individual that, you know, I'd have to say at best is a bit callous. In other words, they're not thinking about the animal's well-being and sometimes actually hurtful. And we may see acts where individuals are throwing firecrackers or fireworks in the animal's direction. Mm. Well, obviously, that should never be thought of as, oh, that's just a young boy acting out. That's actually a behavior that needs to be stopped. If you happen to know of people, I hope people listening to this wonderful broadcast know that they can go to their local Humane Society or Animal Control Agency and report that behavior, and they will investigate it. So obviously, that's just talking about the more negative side of the way people behave around animals. Back to how to protect them, it's again keeping them in a calm, comfortable environment, not anywhere around the fireworks. Sometimes, in rare instances, you may have an animal that behaves in such a fashion that you may want to talk to your veterinarian about whether you should use some tranquilization on July 4th, since those sounds are so apparent. But to me, like any medication or drug, that should be a course of last resort. First, just taking care of them and comforting them and acting well around them is going to go a long way.
Now, let's say that you're outside, you're having fun, and you come in and you find your dog, you know, absolutely terrorized. I mean, they can be seriously psychologically impacted by these things, and they don't know. What is a way to start to help that animal regain their stability?
Well, one preventative piece I'd like to again remind our listeners about is, please make sure, like always, that your dog or cat or animal is properly identified. If the worst happens and they get out of the house or run away, you want to know that they have a collar and a license and an identification tag. Hopefully they've also been microchipped, which is a little electronic device about the size of a piece of rice that goes under their skin and permanently allows them to be identified. So before they act, let's make sure they're properly identified in case the worst happens. If you come in the house, you find them very frightened. Animals respond very well to human touch if they've been socialized, so comforting them, keeping them in a darker room, not in a bright room, is going to help, and redirecting their behavior. That's the night that if you've got a chew toy or some real treat that they just love to play with, often redirecting your friend's behavior, your four-legged or two-legged, or depends, because this applies to birds, it applies to other animals also, redirecting their behavior to something more positive will often take their fear away.
I know I have a cockatiel, for example, and I can't say that this bird has been exposed to 4th of July revelry, but birds in cages, that seems like that could be very dangerous, because when birds get panicked in a cage, they can seriously injure themselves.
Absolutely. That's a great example for us all to learn from, of how an animal, when frightened, can hurt themselves. And where birds are concerned, they go back to that dark space. As you probably know with your cockatiel, if you cover the cage, they calm down. Many animals are going to be individuals. In my case, my dog is crate trained. She thinks of her crate as her den, so that's a place for her to actually go to and feel comfort. We'll direct her attention to that. We'll give her a green bone. We'll give her something to chew on, and she does great. And by the way, a green bone is one of those toys that you can buy in a pet store and buy, you know, in various facilities. They're chew bones.
Let's talk specifically to kids right now. Because, you know, I've been a kid, I've been a guy, I've had lots of fun with sparklers, I've done terrible things with firecrackers. It's part of growing up. Sometimes things happen to kids where they just feel like they really want to tease and taunt animals, and they think it's funny. What can you tell kids about that?
I guess first, in talking to both kids and adults, we have to realize what that behavior is. And I was a little boy, too. And, you know, we've all had our moments.
Sure?
Mine was never around animals, but we've all had our moments. And I think we all have to be understanding of each other, but remind each other about compassion. There's a difference between surprising a friend and making an animal frightened. And when we frighten an animal, we have to think about ourselves being frightened. That is a negative feeling that we just don't like. And I think since we get unconditional love, in other words, our animals give us tremendous love and they ask nothing in return, they deserve for us to remember that they are living beings that have feelings, and we don't want to frighten them. Again, talking to both kids and adults, talking to our families. If you know of an individual that kind of just doesn't see this or understand it, please bring it to an adult's attention so that they can take the appropriate action to stop it. You know, today if you're throwing a firecracker at a cat, it's a lot easier to think when you're 20 years old that you might want to hurt a person because you've become a bit more callous. And I think that's a learning lesson. That's one of so many things that animals bring into our life. When we look through their eyes and we interact with them and learn compassion from them, we actually teach each other a compassion about each other.
another aspect of this, too, and you make this point so well, is the fact that these animals are so prepared to love us and be our lifelong friends and bear almost anything, to be our friend. But one bad experience can shatter and destroy that opportunity for the lifetime of that animal.
Well, and that's just one more thing I think we can learn about people. You lose the trust of a person or a friend, and it's very hard to regain it. Animals are actually a lot more forgiving, but you're absolutely correct. One frightening experience may change their behavior. Suddenly, they may not want to go out in the backyard anymore when that's what they used to do. Suddenly, you may be dealing with an animal that's soiling the house because they used to be able to go out for a walk, but the last time they went out for a walk, a big explosion went off. You're absolutely correct. When we lose the trust of another living being, whether it be an animal or a person, it's very hard to get it back, and they truly trust us.
They certainly do. Let's say that someone was out, and let's say it's kids, for example, and maybe some of their friends want to, some of the kids may have an interest in kind of taunting animals. What might you advise them? How can they help deal with that moment? What's the best advice?
Well, I think, first of all, for the sake of the animal, remove yourself from the situation. It's not fair for the animal to be subjected to that type of behavior. The second is, depending on how open and accepting the other person is of saying, hey, you know, it's one of those situations, let's put yourself in their feet, I won't say shoes, and how would you feel if someone threw a sparkler at you or came at you? You know, I know you may not mean to hurt them, but just think of what the animal is feeling, what you would feel if somebody 10 times bigger than you suddenly came at you with this sparkling device or with this, you know, piece of rolled paper that suddenly made a very loud, frightening sound. How would you feel under those circumstances? So we try to relate it. I think I've always made a lot of headway with trying to relate it about how would you feel if you were in their feet. And, to the person that's willing to listen, I think they would understand that. To the person who says, oh, come on, it's just a dog or a cat or a guinea pig or a raccoon. What's the big deal? They're still living creatures. I'm not suggesting we equate them with being the same as people, but they have feelings, they have emotions, they have fears, and they feel pain. And we can't forget that.
We've been talking pretty much about sort of our pets and our animals, but what about as you go into rural areas or even, you know, all it takes is a woods or a forest or is some natural areas. How about, what can you tell us about how some of this may affect literally the wild creatures?
It depends. What we also know is that animals, just like people, we compensate for a lot of things in our environment. I used to tell an interesting story. I used to practice in Boston. And when you watch companion animals in cities, if they don't hear the street noises at night, like if suddenly everything stops, they're actually scared because they're used to those noises. Versus a rural environment, if they never hear an ambulance and suddenly one goes by the house, all the animals, you know, kind of react. So a lot has to do when we're talking about wildlife, when we're talking about companion animals or people, what's the standard in the environment? Most likely, many wild animals have probably realized that at some point during the year, obviously they don't understand why it's happening, but sometime during the year, they hear all these loud sounds go off. They probably hunker down, get in a safe place, and hide.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have to be sensitive to it? Yes, we do, but we live in a complex world. I think we all have to learn to sort of get along. No different than, you know, people who grew up in the country and certainly hear coyotes howling at night. You know, look at that as a beautiful sound. If you're visiting from the city and it's your first night in the country, it can be pretty fearsome at
That's
first.
True.
And what we do is we seek out to understand what it is, learn from it, and accept it.
We're talking with Dr. Mark Goldstein, who is the president of the San Diego Humane Society. You know, I'm going to try something here. Let's go 180 degrees. Now, we've talked about some of the things that potentially are dangerous to our animals at this time. What are some ideas on how we can absolutely show these animals that we love them? Some of the best ways for us to really bond, you know, that maybe they go through these experiences. Maybe we need to give back a little bit. What are some fun ideas that way?
Well, Sydney, first, one very positive way to learn some of these things I would point out, and your listening audience I know is very widespread, but for instance, I'm sure there are programs here at the San Diego Humane Society and SPCA. We have something called Animal Adventure Camp. We have a camp every summer for 5 to 14-year-olds. And come to day camp for a week, you'll have a great time, and guess what? You'll also learn a lot of these issues on how to interact with our animals, how to walk up to them safely, how to play with them, what their needs are. So So I would encourage both parents and kids out there thinking about programs, whether it's a Saturday program or a camp program, check with your local Humane Society or SPCA, and you may find that there are actually programs that both adults and kids can take part in to learn some of the things we're talking about. Some of the more specific issues, just around this issue, we're talking summer. You know, here we have, you know, some people listening tonight going, you know, we'll go out to the beach and watch the fireworks, and while we're there, we'll make sure the dog's safe, we'll put him in the car. Because first of all, they're not protected from the noise and the sounds. We talked about making sure they're in an environment where they can't hurt themselves. The car, to me, is a strange environment with lots of obstacles in it. And most importantly, a car, even out in a 60-degree day with the sun up, can become a lethal place, can become a very, very dangerous place. So for all of us, you know, listening today, when you go to do something with your animal, to most extent, if you think about what I want this done to me, would I want to be locked up in a car in the sun? No. Then let's not do it to our dogs and cats and birds and guinea pigs and rabbits and all the other wonderful animals in our life. To be safe around animals and what to make them feel comfortable, you know, realize that we're pretty big to most of our domestic animals when we talk about dogs and cats. You know, when you approach an animal, shrinking your size a little bit so you're not this, I happen to be 6'2", I love animals, and even I forget. I did, in fact, this morning, I approached somebody walking a dog this morning on our campus. And, you know, came right up, knew how to put my hand out, but I forgot that I was a little bit close and I'm 6'2", and his first look at me was like, who's the jolly giant? So making ourselves a bit smaller, making ourselves a lot less threatening, knowing that they respond to smells and sounds and touch, but first and foremost to be safe with the animal and ourselves. If you're approaching a strange animal, ask the person with them, is it okay if I play with your animal? Don't assume that every animal can just be touched immediately, any more than we assume each other can be touched without asking permission first. So approaching slowly, taking our time, being positive in our reinforcement with our animals, not yelling at them when they do something bad, but redirecting their behavior and rewarding them for that. All of that goes into making the animals feel more comfortable in our environment.
Now, of course, one of the great services that the Humane Society provides, and that is for lost animals, animals that have run away for whatever reason. And I would guess there's going to be a lot of animals that are going to end up that way. I've witnessed dogs, for example, that have been traumatized, and they just take off terrorized, and they may be miles away before they really even realize. And then also when they're terrorized, very often they're afraid to really show themselves, and so it can be hard to get your animal back. What would be your advice in case your animal happens to be one of those that takes off on a run?
Well, if you've lost your animal, you want to do a couple of things. First of all, realize that somebody should stay in the area where the animal is lost, because many times they actually, just like with lost children, they'll come back to where they were lost. Because they, at that point, realize, hey, this is a pretty scary world out there. I had it pretty good with those guys. I'm going back.
That's great.
So first of all, don't go too far, at least leave someone in the area so that they can be helpful in trying to find the animal. Second of all, you know, widen that scope of looking for him more and more. If you can't find the animal, then obviously letting your neighbors, letting the people at the area location know you're looking for them. When it goes to looking at institutions, I appreciate you giving the credit to humane societies. Some humane societies actually, I'm talking now in the state of California, may have what is called the animal control contract. If they don't, it will actually be your local animal control or animal services facility where a lost animal will show up. If one comes to us here at the Humane Society, we will actually turn a lost animal over to the Department of Animal Services. That makes it much easier for someone to go to only certain places to look for their lost animal. So a lost animal always goes, at least in the state of California, to the local municipal agency, whether it's the Department of Animal Services or the Department of Animal Control or both. Some humane societies have those contracts. So you have to know who your municipal animal welfare association is when looking for a lost animal. Putting up signs, letting the neighbors know, and being patient, keeping yourself calm, all of those help in finding a lost animal.
And then one last thing, too. So you find your animal, but they're scared. And typically, in the past, when you've called them, they've come, but for some reason they're not doing that now. What's the best advice?
Well, first, food is a great positive motivator. You want to go out there looking with some treats in your hand. You know, you don't necessarily want to be swinging a leash around. You, again, want to make yourself look inviting. At this point, you're absolutely right. They're scared. Entering into any emergency situation, and that's what that is at that point, make sure we assess the location. We don't want to walk towards the animal if on the other side of the animal is a highway. So take out, check out the situation. Realize that, you know, half the battle is won if you can see them. Now be calm, be patient, be welcoming, lower yourself down, become small. That is not the time to yell at the animal for getting lost. That's the time for them to be feel loved so they come towards you.
Compassion at that point, they perceive. Well, Dr. Mark Goldstein, president of the San Diego Humane Society, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the Wild Side News. And if people want to find out more about the San Diego Humane Society or the Humane Society at the national level, how can they do so?
Well, as far as the San Diego Humane Society and SPCA, and realize that we're all very independent organizations that work together, but we are separate organizations, you can find out a lot about us on our website at www.sd, like in San Diego, so sdhumane.org, or feel free to give us a call at 619-299-7012. You can reach us that way and learn more about us. You know, there are other national organizations that you can go on the web. If you just put in Humane Societies or Animal Welfare Associations, you'll find out about them. And I ask that people listening support their local Humane Society or SPCA. Learn who they are, learn how to work with them, and if people are interested, I'm sure any one of us love volunteers. So also think of that if you want to learn about animals, and come down and spend some time with us.
Dr. Mark Goldstein, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on the Wild Side News.
Great, and we thank everybody for listening. It's a great show that you have, and thank you for your support, Sydney.
You bet, anytime.
As we celebrate our independence, let me send out a personal promise to all my listeners around the world. The United States is growing up, and we've had it pretty damn good for a long time. And it's led to some pretty self-righteous actions around the globe. But I know this. We will put things right. We have regained our soul before, and we will again. And when we do, with you as friends, we will have a world of peace and friendship. It's coming. Let's all promise to get there soon. This is Sydney Wildsmith saying adios until next Thursday or any time on the archives when your voice of the earth reaches out around the world here on the Wild Side News.